Good morning and welcome to Morning Cyber. My name is Justin with Rogue Security, and I'm here with my co-host.
Joe Flower from Cyberforce. How are you, Justin?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good, Joe. I'm looking forward to the weekend. I'm going camping again, which is really exciting. But
Nice, nice.
I'm enjoying being outside this summer. How about yourself?
Yeah, I am well, looking forward to the weekend also. It's been a very busy week. I've spent the week deep diving into some more IAM tools due to work. SailPoint is interesting, but there's the HashiCorp stuff. So, I mean, I found it quite interesting learning about it, and there's a very good YouTube video that I watch. So I'll probably pass that over to you at some point. But other than that, the weekend is exciting as well to look forward to. There's a couple of football matches going on, so I'm looking forward to that. Obviously, the Canadian Premier League is here on the island, kicks off today. So I'll be watching some of those as well. But yeah, my weekend's going to be football, 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 and it probably will be until the conclusion of the season in May of 2021. So that's what my weekend's going to consist of.
It's so nice to have sports back and events back. It's been nice. So I want you to imagine something, Joe. Sorry, go ahead. Did you want to finish your thought?
Oh no, don't you worry. I'm imagining. You make me imagine. Go on.
Okay. All right. You've just applied for a job, and I know you know what this is like. I know you know what this is like. You show up, first day's great. Your manager reaches out to you via Skype because everything's remote or Teams in this case. Who knows what it might be? Everything seems normal enough. You onboard, your business sends you a check just to buy supplies because, well, things are remote. How are they going to send things from the US to Canada in time and all this and that and the other thing? You go out, you get the supplies, you get a few gift cards, you need to send them back to the organization just to reduce the overhead. And yeah, a week later, you get a call from the bank. It's fraud. What do you think of that?
I have a couple of stories in regards to that. I didn't
Oh,
know it ran as deep as that.
interesting.
It's difficult to see how much detail I can go into because I would have to ask the person's explicit permission to let me tell you, but I can tell you as if they were someone called Bob. Okay. Someone I know called Bob was applying through jobs on Indeed. Okay. And one came back and it said, "Hi, great to see that you've applied. We think you're going to be an amazing match for the position. How would you feel about starting next week without any equipment?" That wasn't said. The person obviously went back. Bob said, "Yeah, that would be great. I'm really excited. What do I need? Are you going to send stuff?" And they said, "We're going to send you a check. And we'd like you to deposit it for us. It may be a bit more than you're expecting, so just send it back. Send the rest of the money back to us on an e-transfer." So, the check was sent. The check was checked. It didn't go into the account. We were having a look at it. Bob phoned me up and he said, "Look, Joe, I need your advice." So he sent me a picture of said check and we were going through it and it got to a point where I knew there was something wrong because the address on the check didn't really make sense. And I was, and you'll think that this was quite impressive. No, I wasn't in cybersecurity at this point. And I looked at the email address that it sent it to us, and it was a photography company. It was for a role of being like a remote kind of admin person for the photography company. And we're in a position where in which Bob was saying, "Look, I don't think this is right either right now." I was like, "All right, okay." So what we did was we kind of backtraced that email address, phoned the guy who we thought it was from the website that belonged to the photography company, and he said, that's not me." This guy was based in Connecticut, and the address that he'd given to us as a return to sender address for the check or for the money was a banged out old car garage or garage.
Wow.
In the suburbs of New York. So it was an elaborate money laundering scam. And you just dread to think the amount of people that this must happen to, because people that are looking for admin positions, maybe a junior role, mm-hmm. are going to do it,
yep.
because it's trust in the workforce. So yeah, I can imagine that. I've lived it with my pal, and I am very intrigued as to why this has come up, because I didn't realize it was just as big. It was one of those silent but deadly things. So yep. what's going on?
So I did not tell you about this story. I intentionally didn't tell you the story and told you about the lead-in, because I knew, based on your experiences with what you do, you mm-hmm. probably would have come across something like this just in the sort of hiring process. And it's so common. It's just another tactic that these malicious actors use, and they replicate business websites, and they register website.coms and .cas with slight word differences and send emails with it, or sorry, slight letter differences. And so if you're not really paying attention, and if they don't do the best job of sending you email or interacting with you, you may not always catch it. And there's actually an article in the CBC, excuse me.
That's okay.
So this actually happened recently. CBC, company Gux-IT. And basically, they were a made-up company based on a real company. And they took the identity of this other company but changed the name. So it was the same images, except the name was different. And it just happened so quickly that there was really nothing. And so the scenario that you gave is a really common one, where they say that they're going to give you a little more because they need you to do something for some reason. And so that's where, like, that's why I mentioned the reduction of overhead, because there's always some reason. And like, these are all red flags, and we always talk about them. And that was, yeah, fantastic.
But I think for me, so it obviously hits home a lot harder. This brings on to a whole topic that I'd love to go into further detail at some point. And it's the complete, social engineering, number one.
Yep.
That's what it is, as a blanket kind of terminology. But if you look at it, it's just so, it's horrible. Someone is so excited to get a job, and you just absolutely tear it apart and put them in jeopardy of facing criminal charges. Because you do. And I think it leads on to so many other things within crime in general. I'm not just talking cybersecurity, Justin. I'm talking, just think about how you're affecting everybody. Obviously, a criminal doesn't think about its victims, but it's just brutal. You're taking someone's genuine happiness and you're turning it into a nightmare. And people will look at them as being a bit stupid for falling for it. And that's the worst part about it, because these criminals are just so very clever. So very clever. They've done it 1,000 times. They'll do it 1,000 more until they get caught. And then they'll still do it after they've served their time.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's just a whole thing. And I mean, I remember this leads into something that I was telling you as well about the situation where someone started a job, but that someone wasn't the right person.
Oh, yes, that's right. We had that conversation today. And that's, it doesn't happen so much in North America, just because of there's really stringent employment laws where, you know, especially in Canada and some of the United States. But you, especially right now where organizations are hiring remote and working remote with staff, you're either on the phone with them and interviewing them through the hiring process, and often they're starting remote. And sometimes they're not getting into the office until these days, it may not be months until after they're hired. Mm-hmm. What can happen there is that sometimes that person that you spoke to on the phone at the beginning to get the job isn't necessarily going to be that person who shows up in the office. So this was a common thing even before the current pandemic, where X individual would apply for a role, get an interview, Y individual would take the interview and get the job, and then X would show up. So it's the person's interview, it's just somebody else interviewing, or sorry, it's the person who is applying for the job is the person who inevitably gets the job, but it's how they got it. Yes. That's one of the more common, maybe not more common, but that is one of the tactics that I've seen.
No, I agree. I couldn't agree more. And it's one of those things that just, it's the reason why people hate the idea of having a remote workforce. That's one of the main factors, I think, for the last 20 years, while people don't, there is no trust. I say that's a silly thing to say. There is a lot of trust in the employment market currently due to the pandemic. Before the pandemic, the idea of going fully remote with your workforce, some companies were doing it, but the majority of companies weren't, because they struggle with the idea of man management. Is that the right term now? Man management?
Man management? People management? People management.
I'd rather say people management, because I think I may have put my foot in my mouth.
I don't think anyone will be offended.
No, I hope not. I didn't mean it to offend, so thank you. The people management, the team management, the employee engagement, they couldn't trust that employees would do the work that they're set out to do. And this whole pandemic has flipped it upon its head, where people are actually working more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, numerous occasions you and I have discussed this. Do you remember when we just started out and we were outside of the office, we were in our own homes, we were all on lockdown here on the island? Well, not lockdown, but people just did it instinctively. And we were working from home, and we'd start, our morning routines would be, we get up, turn our laptop on. Naturally, you sit, you have a coffee, you read the news, but then you get your emails coming in, which honestly, I've got nothing to complain about, because I loved it. I love that stage of the lockdown, to be fair. And you just forget what time it is. Mm-hmm. And you continue working and working, and then it'll be like, oh, it's dinner time.
Oh, yes.
It was 6 or 7 o'clock. So you'd worked from 7 till 7. And I think employers are slowly starting to realize that their employees can be trusted at home. They really can. And it's obviously, you're always going to get your outliers that aren't, to be blunt, they're not going to do the work that they first signed up for because they saw it as a bit of a holiday. But the majority of people within the workforce have really stuck to what they needed to do. The ones that have been lucky enough, Justin, bear in mind, lucky enough to have kept their jobs.
Oh, yeah.
There's a number of people that we need to think of that have been furloughed or even made redundant, and I think this is a whole other topic as well. It shows the stalwart companies, and it shows the ones that maybe should have been pre-planning, doesn't it?
100%. And yeah, one thing you said, the pre-planning and the having a difficult time going remote, we've built very local architectures in our businesses. Mm-hmm. So we've got a local firewall, we've got a local network. Mm-hmm. You can't do work outside of that. If you're lucky enough to have an IT staff who knows how to set up a proper VPN, maybe you can.
Mm-hmm.
I think cloud is obviously the option. I'm working with, so through our Rogue Security, we're working with a client to implement a secure access service edge model in their office, which is actually just an entire, essentially the entire organization's network exists on the internet, in the cloud. And it doesn't matter what device you connect to it with. It could be a corporate device or your own device.
Okay.
The same security is in place while still maintaining your individual privacy for, a BYOD instance. Mm-hmm. It's really cool. I think there's a lot of technologies out there that are gonna start to see some of the limelight now. Remote is just a real thing, and I wouldn't say that this was a good situation, but there's a that's something that may come out of this.
Mm. That's fair. So that brings me on to a kind of topic that will lead into a news article that I was going to bring up at some point. The cloud, okay. Just how trustworthy, Well, I agree. It is amazing. I didn't understand it until you and I had a proper sit down and we went, I obviously understood the premise of it, but a proper understanding was when you and I sat down and went through it, and it took about an hour and a half. But the cloud in general, obviously everyone's got either Android, iPhone. The cloud that comes with Android, am I correct? I'm an iPhone user, but Android is Google, is it not?
Correct.
Yeah, so is that, no, I, obviously that sounds stupid. I know it's Google, but is it the Google Cloud element to it?
So Google kind of doesn't have, Android would be their operating system, and yes. Google's cloud products are, they don't really call them cloud products, but
no,
you've got Gmail, which is their email cloud, and you've got Google Drive, which is, would be comparable to their iCloud. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's exactly the same idea, just mirrored.
Yeah. So what's the safety protocols with the majority of the world's population having their cloud, the general population? I mean, obviously you might be slightly different. You may have something odd going on at the back end there. That sounded funny. No, but I mean, as in like, so the general population would have a Google cloud product or an iCloud account. So where is the safety net there when it comes into the information that is being stored? Has Apple, I haven't read into the in-depth details of a contract with Apple when you buy the cloud storage, but do they ultimately own your data?
Yeah, pretty much. They typically don't do anything crazy with it. We actually, this was a conversation we kind of had in episode one.
Yeah.
with Gabby Hempel, and so check that out if you haven't heard it. But there's definitely some protocols, because your data and everything in it, in that you store there, is only as secure as, you know, Apple and Google. And your data exists on the same layer as other individuals' data.
Okay.
It's protected, but the whole idea of getting hacked is breaking those protections, and there's different ways to do that, either through, you know, the third party or the vendor, like just happened with Twitter, or you can do it through the user. Well, it's actually be kind of the same thing, but you can do a hack of the technical infrastructure, or what happens most often is the social engineering and the getting access to your password. Especially if you don't have multi-factor authentication, you definitely want to have it, especially if you're on iCloud. Apple's just a target because their devices are very easy to use, and that makes them attractive to people. And it, when things are easy to use, we tend to forget that we need to still be cautious.
Okay.
And so there's definitely precautions that you can take, like strong passwords, multi-factor authentication, and don't put anything on there that you wouldn't want the general public to see. And honestly, there could be somebody looking at it, but hopefully it's encrypted.
Oh, fingers crossed. So, I mean, that leads into this whole, for our listeners, I think it was this week, Ancestry, which is a DNA database where you can request to see where your lineage comes. So, for example, I've never done it, but I know for a fact that I have family members who have done it, and my lineage sits quite strongly within the Slavic and Nordic regions. So obviously being from England, it's a bit of a mixture of backgrounds, and it was very cool to find out, but putting all that information in, and for one company to have that information on yourself, number one, having looked back at it, is ridiculous. And with Ancestry being bought by a private equity firm, what happens to that data? That's what I really want to know.
I am very interested to see what happens with this. Because honest to goodness, this could be very interesting. So if you think
Oh, yeah.
of this in data points, because that's just kind of how I'm thinking about it right now, you've got a private equity firm who deals with a lot of financials. They understand data very well. I worked at a financial institution in security, and we dealt with financial data really well, as security data really well, technology data really well. Now, they build profiles on individuals based on their habits, and that's how they develop products. Now, if they can link that back to an individual's DNA, holy cow! I don't even like they could basically. I don't even know. My head's gonna explode, but
Well, I
it's not
think
good. It's not great. I don't think.
no.
I'm hoping that like a regulator steps in, like a
Well,
privacy
see,
regulator, but we'll see.
you say that. So when I first saw it, I reposted it. I was distraught. I thought it was ludicrous and I wanted more information. So the company that had first released the article, from my knowledge, was Vice. Now, Vice, I love Vice. I think it's an amazing documentary. Well, it's a world news service provider, but the documentaries they create are really cool. There's one that we will definitely put up on our website with their permission at some point, which is around how Israel is becoming one of the really cyber hubs of the world.
Oh,
And it's
yeah.
really interesting to have a watch. But what they've put out is, so it's Blackstone, okay, Justin, which is intriguing enough, as it is that they actually bought it because they're an investment firm. So, number one, that they bought it, but the amount of money that they bought it for really took me aback because it's $4.7 billion. A company like that, in my opinion, you wouldn't think would be worth that much because some people may not have heard about it. But this is where it gets interesting, Justin. So, 3 million people pay yearly to use Ancestry. Okay. So, that's 3 million people worldwide. 27 billion records are held on Ancestry. And 100 million family trees are on there. So it's not just a case of, oh, there's a couple of people that use it to get their family history. There's a huge number of people that are using this service. And 18 million people have been DNA tested through the company. So they have 18 million people's DNA records within that database. And what really frustrated me the most was when companies say they won't do something, typically that means that they've got a plan. Do you see what I mean? So the quote says, "To be crystal clear, Blackstone will not have access to user data, and we are deeply committed to ensuring a strong consumer privacy protections at the company."
So, yeah, here's the thing. Yeah, they bought it from other investment firms, and it's an investment for them. That's what they are saying. The difference here is that they bought it from multiple investment firms, where you have multiple organizations who are overseeing what's being done. And now it's being sold to one company with one controlling interest. And I just did the numbers on it, the 27 million records, 27 billion records, and 47 or $4.7 billion. I just need to add this and do the thing,
Yeah,
and we'll
good job
do
you
the,
are. My math
that's
is dreadful.
57 cents per record is what they bought
Oh,
that for.
absolute madness, isn't
Imagine
it? And
that.
then,
That's what you're worth. That's what your data point is worth, 57 cents.
well, if you've used that, I mean, the most ludicrous thing, which I find quite interesting at the same time, because I'm very interested in kind of legal proceedings. Okay. So when precedents can be set, I think we discussed this on the last episode about how cybersecurity criminals seem to be tried and tested, and they get quite a lot more of a sentence when it comes to jail time than someone that goes in and robs a bank. And that's due to the fact that the governing bodies are trying to set precedents going forward. So, for example, privacy concerns regarding the data that was collected through those DNA kits that were done, it has kind of grown in recent years why they are kind of concerned about it. And that's purely because it's the data is not going to be used the way it first and like was anticipated to be. So for example, if these records fall into the wrong hands, and I'm not saying that the police are the wrong hands, but they're not the intended people to receive the information. Okay, so just hear me out.
Yep.
There was a case where a serial killer called Joseph James D'Angelo was caught as a result of one of his relatives submitting their DNA to an open source genetic database, which was then used by law enforcement to match DNA left at one of the crime scenes. So,
whoa.
Exactly. So how do you go about setting precedents in these cases? It's going to be this, I'm waiting for this to explode. As in, it's going to throw in so many questions. So since the Golden State Killer case kind of exploded, this is a quote, "We've seen there are risks to law enforcement authorities wanting to have access to that data," said Jen King. So Jen King is Director of Consumer Privacy at the Center for Internet and Society. So this, okay. This whole thing, like, it's really going to, one purchase of a company can really change the infrastructure of the legal system when it comes to setting precedents upon the gathering of data. I mean, do you remember Cambridge Analytica and all of that stuff that was going on? That has sent absolute shockwaves through the data privacy system. So that was kind of the news story that I wanted to talk about. And I just wanted to say, if anybody has done the ancestry stuff, who's listening, I would be really intrigued to see just what you were asked to provide and whether you feel slightly concerned now that you've heard this. Because if I was in your position, I wouldn't go crazy out of worry, but I'd have it on my radar, I think is the best way to describe it.
I'm always super paranoid, especially when it comes to stuff like your DNA, your biometrics. It's who you are. It identifies you. Like, we see data breaches every day and hacks every day. It's just like, it's not, they're going to get it. It's just, when are they going to figure out and have the ability to use it?
That's the question.
Like 50 years down the road where this data, this DNA gets leaked, I'm sure we've got some technologies that are going to be able to use that information. Holy moly. So. Oh, that's some sci-fi stuff.
Right. Some Black Mirror stuff.
Oh yeah.
Speaking of which, have you ever watched Black Mirror?
So I'm waiting until I have the time to just binge it because I've heard it's so fantastic and I don't want to ruin it for myself because I know that if I don't have time, I'll watch like two shows and I won't go back to it. But I've been told it's super, super good.
You'll go back. You'll 100% go back. Charlie Brooker, his...
Maybe I'll have to do it. Maybe I'll have to just start it.
I absolutely love it. And I think everyone that listens to this would love it as well. Anybody that's interested in the idea of something. So the idea of the world being a different way to the way that it is. And I mean, with 2020, the way that it's gone, it's somewhat a Black Mirror episode in itself, to be honest with you, Justin. You don't necessarily have to binge it. Like the way I did it was I watched one a night. So I wouldn't sit there and watch more than one because honestly, after watching an episode, you're going to have to sit and think for about an hour. Really worthwhile. Really worthwhile. It's a great, great, great series to watch. And I don't know how many seasons there are. Maybe there's four, maybe. But they just get better and better. I don't know. Miley Cyrus was in one of the most recent ones. And that I didn't really picture her as coming across as quite a serious actress. And that's just my own personal opinion. Because I never watched her in anything before. And she actually played the role incredibly well. And it's a very, very good episode. But it makes you think. It hits your emotions quite hard. And it does make you think about your own privacy and how to be secure. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that's just my little titbit on Black Mirror. So I'd say watch it. It's very interesting. Then we can discuss it over our lunch one day.
Done.
So yeah. So, I mean, there's a few other news stories I've got coming up and I just was wondering, you mentioned a few to me this week and I think we should probably talk about them. So what would you like to start with?
Yeah, so this was just another point in the another nail in the coffin of no one is not impacted, and no one is safe from a data breach. Are you familiar with SANS? SANS?
Yes,
Yeah, SANS Institute. They do a lot of cybersecurity training and certification, and they were breached.
what? When?
This was August 13th. This article came out. It was like
Oh.
yesterday, today, last couple of days.
Imagine the irony of that, the
28,000
absolute irony.
personal identifiable information items. So that's names, addresses, phone numbers. I mean, it could be any. You have to have like two of those pieces, your name and then something that can bring you together
Yeah,
to qualify
I can
as
just
PII.
so I can just imagine right now, right? Someone's gone to take a qualification from them. They failed. It's a penetration testing one, right? They failed it, or they failed a hacking one through SANS, and they say, "Well, you know what? I'm going to prove to you that I can hack this," and they hack SANS and release everything. I think if that is the case, it's absolutely hilarious. Obviously, it's something that's very serious, and we shouldn't get any kind of pleasure from hearing that, but that if that is the case, there's more to it than meets the eye, I think, Justin. There's a lot more to it than meets the eye.
Yeah, so they kind of already know. They identified it fairly quickly, and actually I did a cyber exercise
Okay.
with FSISAC a few years ago, and this was one of the scenarios, but or this was the scenario where I don't know if they know how it occurred, but there was an email configuration change and a malicious email address got added as a forwarding rule to someone's email. So basically, all the email that this individual sent out was also, or sorry, received, was also sent to this malicious email address. And that's where the loss of the data came from.
Oh,
It's
okay.
and it's little things like that. And if you're an organization, have an alert or a notification for any forwarding rule additions or changes.
That was interesting. That is interesting. So, I mean, from my perspective, that's a story that will definitely go down in a university question in a couple of years' time. Why was the SANS Institute hacked, and how did they do it? That'll be an answer, I think, and you'll have to write an essay on how to prevent that in the future, I would say. So, I mean, my other one, if you're free to let me ask you some questions. Yeah.
Oh, I would love that. Before
Okay.
we start, I just want to say I had a question
Okay.
and somebody asked me if I was cheating on the last quiz
Oh.
because I took some pauses. But that's for dramatic effect, people.
Well, it's not only for dramatic effect, it just takes Justin a bit longer to think about the best answer. And I can tell you he wasn't cheating because I didn't even tell him where the link to the quiz was or where the quiz was coming from. So, for example,
She
this
knows who she
quiz.
is.
Oh, well. There you go then. Don't say he's cheating. He's not a cheater in many aspects. So there's a question one of 10, Justin. Social media websites compose a threat to the government of Canada. Oh, ding ding. Did
Oh,
you get
yeah.
that notification sound? I just had a notification sound in my ear. Did you get that?
I heard a ding ding. I heard a ding ding.
Oh, well, it was nothing interesting. It was Dell telling me that I need to optimize something or other. I'll
Oh, I
show
heard
you it tomorrow.
you saying ding ding, but I didn't hear the Dell ding ding.
Fair enough. So, social media websites compose a threat to the government of Canada,
You bet.
as departments and their networks are frequently targeted by threat actors looking to gather information on GC employees, or Government of Canada employees, projects and systems. Now, your manager is just, I'm assuming I have this quiz, but it's actually for employees of the Government of Canada. I think this could be what it is, which is interesting that they openly have it.
Even
But
better.
to your manager, Justin, has just posted an extremely controversial and uncharacteristic status update on your department's official social media site. What do you do? Retweet it immediately. Ask your manager if they did, in fact, post the update. Comment on the update with your own views and try to spark a debate or forward it to your colleagues. I mean, come on. Even I know this.
Oh, my Lord.
No, you wouldn't really.
Oh, I mean, there's part of me that would kind of want to, like, see where it went. But I would definitely want to, you always want to confirm. There's, you cannot trust. You always need to, there should be some level of trust between you and that piece of information. And that could be a face-to-face conversation or a phone call or some method that you know, and not just depending upon receiving a piece of information, because you can't always know where that has come from.
Well, we got it right. So basically, I mean, your answer would be ask your manager.
Perfect.
The best part about this is it actually comes up with different things to explain why. So when using departmental social media accounts, ensure that you have read and understood your organization's social media policies. So basically, don't spout off about something that is controversial. If it's your thoughts, make sure you actually talk to somebody about them first if you're going to post it on a public site. I think it's the best way to describe it, unless it's your personal social media. So, and also report all suspicious events to your IT department, regardless if it was someone being a bit choice, still report it to the IT department. So question two, malware or malicious software is designed to destroy data, steal information, or frustrate the user. Approximately how many pieces of malware are created per minute? 9, 33, 69, or 102.
Oh my Lord. This is great.
This could be tricky, this one. I would have no clue. Oof. I'd say, well, it depends on how big the malware is, on how many you can make in a minute.
That's a very logical answer.
Well, yeah, I don't know. It's not like you're making different handkerchiefs, see how many you can make in a minute. I mean, this genuinely, in my opinion, could be any of three. I'm saying, can I have a go?
Yeah, absolutely.
I reckon, I'm not going to say 69 just for the hilarity of it. I'm going to say 102, because they wouldn't put something so high if it wasn't. What do you think?
So I was going to say 102 as well, because it's not difficult to write a piece of code that could be used for malware. And so I'm thinking the number's going to be high, but we'll see.
Okay, we'll see. 3, 2, 1. Incorrect.
Oh, man.
It's 69.
Oh.
Malware can act in a discrete fashion, making it difficult to detect whether a computer has been compromised due to the constantly changing nature of malware. It is very important to implement the top 4 mitigation measures and continually update your antivirus software and firewalls, which can help prevent intrusions. Now, I don't know if I agree with that, because I kind of think that there may be a way in which you can create more malware per minute. That's like saying, how fast can this certain car go? Surely you can make more per minute. Am I right?
Yeah, I think they qualify that as actual malware. And that number is probably accelerating quite quickly. So I'd say you are also correct.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So question number 3, there are 10 questions, but I'll probably just do, well, I don't know, whatever you want. But question number 3, spear phishing is a targeted attempt to steal valuable personal information using email. An email can be crafted to appear to come from someone in the victim's organization, which is what we've just spoken about. But that everyone knows, once the employee falls into the trap and clicks on the malware attachment or divulges personal information, it can be used to gain access to company resources. Now, this happens every day. I hear about this all the time. I heard a story from someone. This happened. They gave away company payment details. It was done for. The day was done.
Yep.
So you get an email, Justin, from a senior manager from a Gmail account, prompting you to open an attachment for an upcoming conference or party. What do you do? A, contact your IT service desk and ask what steps you should take. B, download and print it immediately. C, forward it to other members on your team who weren't included in an email and might want to come and join the party. D, forward the email to your personal account and check it from home.
So the funny thing is that I've seen C and D more than I'd like to admit. But the answer that I'm going to go with is A.
I would say A. And the thing is as well, like, for example, you've just come into an organization. Your manager sends you a Christmas party invite. It may have come from what looks to be their personal Gmail account. You may open it. Say they're out of the office for the day. You get this email, Christmas party's next Friday. Please open the link to choose what food you'd like. Click it, you open it to show your teammates, oh, look, this is the menu. And that's just how easy it can be. So you're right. I know people that have done that, but we were correct. It was go to the IT service desk. So anything yes. that you're not sure about, I think the problem is this obviously can incur quite a lot of hesitation on the workday if you just say, oh, I don't know what to do. And I say it like that because that's how I sound when I ask Justin a question. I don't know what to do, probably four times a day. But in regard to phishing emails, and you genuinely don't know. I can't trust anything in regards to those kind of emails now because Justin's put me on such a high alert. So question number four. I remember we had this discussion about zero day. So a zero day exploit is a cyber intrusion which exploits a vulnerability that is not yet public. Such exploits put Government of Canada departments at high risk as they are exposed to security measures if they do not effectively defend themselves prior to an intrusion. Which of the following computer programs have experienced a zero-day exploit? Java, Adobe Reader, Internet Explorer, or all of the above?
Oh, I was just, as you were going through, I was definitely like all of them. By definition, pretty much everything is a zero day at one point in time. So,
okay. So let's just say all of the above and see what we get. Well, correct. Since vendors may issue security bulletins or advisories when an exploit becomes known, it's important to heed their security advice to help protect your networks. Fair enough. Cybercrime, Justin, question 5 of 10, involving malicious activities such as hacking, phishing, and spamming is not only frustrating but can be very costly to the average consumer. These costs are not only measured in terms of monetary loss, but also in recovery time. This is really cool. What was the global cost paid by consumers in 2012 due to cybercrime? A, $14 million. B, $224 million, C, $14 billion, or D, $114 billion. Bear in mind, this is average consumer, so we're not talking all corporations, we're just talking average consumer. So it could be me or you, just at home.
I'm going to say $14
billion. Okay.
I'm going to go with that.
I think I would have gone for the same. And the answer is, oh, wow. $114 billion.
Ooh.
So not only did consumers pay the equivalent of $114, they estimated the value of time lost due to the offenses was $274 billion, bringing the total cost of cybercrime to a staggering $388 billion in the year of 2012.
Wow, that's incredible.
That is absolutely mad. So question 6, users and businesses are increasingly reliant on smartphones in order to communicate and organize their work and personal lives. It is as important to protect mobile devices as you would a computer because of the highly sensitive information they frequently contain and the exponential growth of the mobile malware in recent years. How many smartphones are lost every year? This is ridiculous. 850,000, 2 million, 70 million, or 123 million?
Oh, it's got... I feel like this one's going to be like the highest number, but I'm going to go with the 70.
Okay. Let's see. Yeah, 70.
Nice.
It's 70. I think honestly, it's a lot. If this quiz is
I knew it was going to be a lot.
Yeah, if this quiz is from this year, then I reckon it would be a lot more. If it's from a year prior, it's probably a bit less because, as you understand, cell phones are being produced on a daily basis. Like, more people are getting them. There's going to be more and more. So question 7. Now, this looks like this is a different one. So the CSE's top 4 migration measures are whitelist applications, patch applications, patch operating systems, minimize administrative privileges. Departments and agencies can benefit from implementing these mitigation measures. Which of the 4 measures is the most expensive? So again, whitelist apps, patch apps, patch OS, minimize administration privileges, or all of the above?
I'm going to say whitelist apps.
Okay, so why? Just before, why would you say that over all of the
So, what were the other three besides all of the above?
Patch apps.
Super easy to automate.
Systems,
super easy to automate.
And minimize administrative privileges.
Super easy to just not create a user with administrative privileges and have two separate users. It's the app whitelisting that takes time and you got to figure it out and configure it. So that's my guess.
It's all of the above.
Oh, now, really?
Well, I kind of agree with it, but I agree with you as well. So I agree with it because they're saying, well, just let's do everything. But the issue is this is what you've said to me on numerous occasions. If you don't do one thing well, you may as well not do the rest. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Whereas I feel as though if they've done all four of those really well, it probably is all of the above. But if one of them's lacking in any way, it's definitely just the one, the only one, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So question number 8, traveling internationally can expose you and your organization to an increased variety of cyber threats. It is important to use your mobile device safely while traveling to protect yourself and your department. So imagine this, you're at the airport using a Government of Canada device, okay?
Okay.
You can't connect to your secure network. You notice an open Wi-Fi network called Free Public Wi-Fi. It is unencrypted and requires no password. What do you do? I wouldn't even do it if I didn't have a Government of Canada mobile device, that's for sure. But connect right away as the risk is low. Do not risk connecting to an unknown network. Connect to a different network offering pay-per-use and encryption.
Yeah, that's a big red flag.
I think
that's a huge red flag. You should never connect to anything like that. And
no.
If it seems too good to be true, it definitely is, especially if it's like Toronto Pearson or something, because if it's there, you're paying for that shit.
That's true. So question 9 of 10. Oh, go on.
I'm just giggling. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. When traveling, it is important to use a secure device and be aware of the surroundings when communicating classified information. So, yet again, picture the scene, Justin. With your device, you're attending a conference in a foreign country. Let's say you've gone somewhere nice. So, you've gone somewhere like Barbados, right? You're in a foreign country. You're at the departmental ComSec custodian. Departmental ComSec custodian lends you a secure cell phone. Okay, so you've got your cell phone. You think it's secure. Your manager wants you to join a call and provide him an update on a specific classified topic. Sounds like really like we're spies, doesn't it? Where should you place the phone call to your manager? In your hotel room, in the conference room, in the washroom, in the conference center lobby, or anywhere, as long as you are aware of your surroundings?
I go for the conference room. That's going to be my guess. Typically, they're meant for that type of thing.
Okay.
Public, like you can close the doors. You obviously have to have some trust of the situation.
See, this is ridiculous. So the answer, I agree with you, because the only way that people are going to hear it is if they tap the room. So if you've gone around and you've got rid of all the bugs, which I don't know how easy that is. I'm not a spy. I don't work for MI5, even though I love listening to James Bond audio books. I'm not James Bond. I wouldn't know where to start when it comes to getting bugs out of somewhere. But they've said anywhere, as long as you are aware of your surroundings. That is such a broad swooping statement. You can say you're aware of your surroundings. There could be someone stood across the room from you and they could be listening to you.
But if you were in a conference room, you'd be very aware of your surroundings.
Of course, if you've got your back against the wall, no one knows. You can see everything coming towards you. You're perfectly fine. But yeah. I don't agree with that answer. So on to the final question, okay?
Okay.
Select an intrusion type. I've got to do this. You've got to help me with this. And then select its associated effect. So first of all, virus. a large network of computers infected with malware that are used to carry out a variety of malicious tasks.
Nope.
Or little snippets of code embedded in files that are actively tracks all browsing and reports back to a marketing server. No. Malicious code sent to a computer to self-replicate. Yeah, I think that's what it is. Well, self-replicate. That's a virus.
That's the key right there.
Okay, so spyware is a large network of computers infected with malware. No, that's botnet, isn't it?
I think you're right, yeah.
So botnet is a large network of computers. And then spyware is little snippets of code. Well, that would make sense. It's not easy to be seen. Okay, next. Correct. So our score, bear in mind some of them were ridiculous. Good job. This will be funny for you to hear this, Justin. Justin,
yeah,
you are on your way to becoming cyber savvy.
Oh, I feel fantastic, just glorious.
But just so you know, we've been given an email address to access some more cybersecurity materials to learn from. So that shows that they have no faith in us. So thank you very much.
Oh,
but that's the quiz. So we got between 5 and 7 correct. So it hasn't actually given us our actual number, which I'll tell you is 7.
Between 5 and 7.
Yeah, wow. So we're known as cyber smart. We're not cyber geniuses, we're cyber smart. So between 5 and 7, we can deal with that. So that was the quiz, Justin. I think it definitely shows that you didn't cheat on the last one.
I wish I cheated. I want to see what I get if I get 8 to 10.
I'm intrigued, but it's such an odd way to do it. Between 8 to 10, you're this. Between 5 to 7, you're this. In 0 to 2, you're not that. You're just not that. So, I mean, that was a quiz. Have you got anything you want to tell people about?
I don't think so. I need to figure out where to go with my career from here, basically.
That's a bit of a... you've not managed that hurdle, the last hurdle. You're now known as cyber smart. Could be it's a bit of a slap in the face, a backhanded compliment. You're cyber smart. Anyway, so I mean, obviously, Justin, I wanted to broach the topic of morning soccer podcast, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely. I was waiting for it.
I was linked up with another close pal of Justin's, Colin, and we started on the morning soccer podcast. The first episode will be dropping on Monday. It's a bit different to this one. It's a bit closer to home for myself. And if you are ever interested in soccer, football, or the idea of we're not just going to talk about the games. We're not just going to talk about the players. We are going to talk about the business side of it as well, and how it works and how it functions behind the scenes, and how sometimes finances can make or break a club. That's our next episode. So it's quite an interesting one. So we're going to have a separate webpage full of that as part of our umbrella company, which is known as the Morning Media Company, which is myself and Justin. So, I mean, if there is anybody that would like to start their own podcast on their chosen hobby, much like Justin and I are doing morning cyber, and now I've taken up morning soccer, and I think Justin will be taking up another one at some point. We don't know.
No doubt.
We'll see. So if there is anybody that would be wanting to do one, that's fine. I know we've had people that are interested in doing one called the Morning Makeup, which is an interesting one. We have the Morning MLB in the works as well. And I mean, even as different as the Morning Cook Show or something like that. I think there is lots to be done here, and we would love to help you out. The podcast would predominantly be yours, and we'd help you set up everything. So it's just to try and get people to do something other than work that is productive and they can add to their repertoire. So if anyone's interested, drop us an email to justin@info.com.
We can do info@morningcyber.com. The Morning Media Company website should be up next week, and that's going to have all the information on how you can get involved, become your own sort of podcast host on your own topic under the umbrella Morning Media, and all of our all of our, so both the Morning Soccer and Morning Cyber websites will be linked from there as well.
Yeah. And it, I mean, obviously we're not in it to make money, Justin and I, we just enjoy doing it. But if you were wanting to try and make a go of it, we can help you. There's ways in which we can help you get some sponsorships for your individual shows. And yeah, we just really like the idea of creating a new podcasting network, podcasting family, as it will. So yeah, I mean, thanks. And we'll speak on the next podcast. Cheers, Justin.
Cheers.